Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
And today we are talking to political commentator Rod Oram. Rod, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, thank you, Zoe. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to start talking about COVID-19. As it stands, Auckland and the Coromandel Peninsula are in an alert level 4 lockdown until Wednesday, with the rest of New Zealand's lockdown lasting 3 days. There are 10 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the community and probably more to be announced later today. And this outbreak is the Delta variant. It's now mandatory for everyone aged 12 and over to wear a mask when they are visiting any essential services, including supermarkets, pharmacies and service stations. What's your take on the government's approach to combating this new COVID-19 challenge in terms of action and communication?
On one hand, government has become very experienced over the last almost 18 months, and so systems have swung into place very well. Also, the ability to trace and identify the origins of infections has increased massively as well. So that's all good. And also, I think the communications are still tracking well. However, this is now a very different stage of the pandemic with the Delta variety because of the speed with which it spreads. And therefore, the next couple of weeks is going to be utterly crucial because if the government can't track the index case, what the origin of this cluster is, then that means that this has been brewing in the community for a while, and therefore we're going to see probably more cases than it's possible to carefully track and trace, and therefore it'll be far, far harder to control these clusters, if more develop, than it was last year. So thus, the elimination strategy that the government's stuck to very resolutely so far is really meeting its ultimate test. And quite honestly, we're going to know, I think, within a couple of weeks, whether it's still going to be practical to achieve elimination or whether we're going to, thanks to vaccines, which do dramatically reduce the chance of infection, and if you get infected, the chance of serious illness and death, drastically reduce all those, that we're now moving into a different territory, which would be pretty much where every other country is, about, and I will say the language, about having to live with COVID. That's, I think, how pivotal these 2 weeks are.
Mm. There have been calls for a more nuanced lockdown approach in the past. A common one is thoughts on excluding the South Island from as strict lockdowns that the North Island has. We do currently understand that besides Auckland and the Coromandel, the rest of the country will only be at alert level 4 for 3 days, but we'll see what happens there. But with the Delta variant and the quickly increasing number of cases, do you imagine nuanced lockdown approaches are feasible?
I don't think so, because of the speed at which this variant spreads and causes infection. For example, domestic airline travel has been back until this lockdown, had been essentially back to pre-COVID levels. So an awful lot of people are traveling, and that's by air. There's obviously a fair amount of travel by road and a tiny bit by rail and all the rest. So we are moving around the country a lot. And given that the Delta variant is so much more contagious, then the chances of even with obviously a small proportion of the population traveling, but that would be enough to get the virus around the country. So I think if it looks as though Delta variant is seems to be quite widespread in the community, I think it's going to be very hard to have geographically isolated lockdowns. I think we're going to have to start thinking of the country as more of a whole than that.
Mm. Now, there were 3 small anti-lockdown protests across Aotearoa yesterday, resulting in the arrest of conspiracy theorists Billy Te Kahika and Vinnie Eastwood, and 6 other people, 8 all up. Now, I'm very wary of not wanting to exaggerate their numbers and salience, but the protesters are endangering others. As we've seen overseas in Australia and around the globe, Delta really gets into all the cracks and complacency. So are the consequences for these anti-lockdown protesters the right ones?
Potentially, yes. But it's really important we do be as strict as we can in terms of how each of us are responding. So yes to the lockdown, but also yes, absolutely being extremely rigorous about wearing face masks, because those palpably make a difference. And as soon as the vaccinations start again, if you haven't been vaccinated, making sure you are as quickly as possible. And the government has a huge task to really ramp up vaccinations. But I think it's really important to distinguish a couple of things here. The first one is that you could be increasingly skeptical about a lockdown, but you could still be very, but you need to be still very rigorous about your own personal behavior. And unfortunately, the two seem to have gone hand in hand elsewhere in the world. That if you are very opposed to any kinds of restrictions, the last thing you want to be told or comply with is wearing a face mask. So I think it'd be logical to wonder whether full lockdown is going to continue to be the best approach, but at the same time taking a lot of personal responsibility and believing that the vaccines do work, masks do work. So I think that as long as people keep that differentiation straight in their head, we would still have an awful lot of protection from the vaccines and the masks, whereas a lot of the protesters, I think most of them would want none of all that.
Now, moving overseas now to the deteriorating and devastating situation that we're seeing over in Afghanistan, there has been quite a bit of coverage of this in the news, but could you please just recap what's happened in recent weeks and months over there?
Well, there's been this stunning ability of the Taliban to seize control of the country faster than I think any intelligence services were expecting. The speed with which they swept into the capital, into Kabul, and then established them in the process of setting themselves up to the government, as government, has been the very, very big surprise. Huge questions about where things flow from here. On one hand, they are promising that they are peaceful, they won't be vindictive, viciously vindictive, or in any other ways vindictive against others who don't follow the same orthodoxies as they do. They're promising to be a different Taliban than they were when they were last in government, so 20 years ago. Or last in control 20 years ago. There's obviously huge, huge skepticism about that. However, they would, if they persisted in their old ways, they would very quickly find themselves incredibly isolated in the world, and therefore finding it very hard to get any kind of support. China might be, and rogue countries like North Korea might be pretty much their only friends in the world. But in the last 20 years, so much has changed. So 20 years ago, Afghanistan, there was very, very high levels of rates of illiteracy, particularly amongst women and girls, and all sorts of other restrictions. And there were no cell phones and all that kind of stuff. Now, Afghan society has, for all the problems over the last 20 years of corrupt governments and all the rest, the country has progressed a lot. And therefore, it would seem very difficult and very counterproductive for the Taliban to try to crack down as if this was, 2000 all over again. So that's why I think we must be, governments in responding to the Taliban need to be ever vigilant for their potential for abuse, but at the same time trying to encourage them into the international community and offer them support to see if it's possible to help Afghanistan progress. I think it's it's a very, very fraught situation, and a lot of people are already suffering massive dislocation and potentially worse.
Now, and, political leaders have been saying how unexpected the takeover was, but in a statement released on Monday, the 16th of August, Amnesty International Secretary General Agnes Callamard says, "What we're witnessing in Afghanistan is a tragedy that should have been foreseen and averted." Should political leaders have expected and prepared for this?
Clearly, the Taliban had greater strength and support around the country than governments realised, or foreign governments realised. So that's clearly an intelligence failure. But on the other hand, the situations can be very volatile and change very rapidly. So it might have looked, and for the best intelligence that was available, that the country would have held together longer if the Americans had stayed, if the government, the existing government, had managed to improve its performance a little bit. But when you take those weak supports out, then you get a very quick collapse. I have no experience in the intelligence field, other than trying to find out things as a journalist through more public sources. So I think it's very easy to second guess this in the light of the collapse.
Now, just for the sake of time, I'd like to quickly touch on New Zealand's response in terms of helping Afghan nationals who are now finding their world turned upside down. Amnesty International New Zealand has said that while the government has made commitments to evacuate New Zealand citizens, those who helped New Zealand's forces and their dependents, that it's not enough, and they would like the government to take every necessary measure to ensure the safe passage out of Afghanistan for a wider range of people, civil society workers, journalists, academics, activists, women, just to name a few. New Zealand is quite far behind the rest of the world in terms of refugees per capita, our quota currently being 1,500 people per year. How likely is it, do you think, that the government will widen its support of the Afghan community in the ways in which Amnesty International calls for?
It might widen it a little bit, but the crucial problem, I'm entirely support what Amnesty International is proposing there, but it's going to be very, very difficult. It would seem to me fairly impossible to get the agreement from a Taliban government to allow that level of departures from the country, because it would be the country would be losing a lot of its most skilled, most talented people. And again, if the Taliban have learned anything in the last 20 years, hopefully one of them is that they need people like that if they're going to build the country in any kind of way. Then there's the sheer physical practicalities of this. I'm going to be fascinated to see how well we manage to get out of the country the small number of people we've already said we're going to get out, like New Zealand citizens and those who had worked for us in Afghanistan. We've sent up a Hercules, which is a small, slow plane, rather than sending up an Air Force Boeing 757. I don't know what the operational reasons were for one versus the other. I'm sure there's good ones. Certainly the Hercules would be a hardened aircraft that could cope with very difficult conditions on the ground better than the Boeing. But anyway, the long and the short of it is, we've got no government presence in Afghanistan, and we're relying on other countries, such as the United States and the UK and Australia, but they will be very, very preoccupied with their nationals. So I think that we're going to be scrambling to get out of the country a very small number of people, and clearly our focus has to be on them first, but then part of an international coalition to try to get more people out of the country should they want to leave.
Well, we could talk about this topic all day, but unfortunately that is all we have time for. Thank you very much, Rod Oram, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Zoe.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.